Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast of Who's Here in the Hamptons. I'm Dan Rettiner, your host, broadcasting from my home in the Hamptons, where I have lived for over 55 years. I've written a dozen books about this glorious place, and I've seen it grow through the years from small tourist towns, quaint fishing villages, and a summer playground for high society, to what it is today, a world-class resort for celebrities, artists, musicians, authors, and billionaires. In my podcast, I will bring you interviews with not only these people, but also prominent local people who have helped shape the Hamptons. Welcome to Dan's Talks. My guest today is Michelle Gerber-Klein, an author who's written a book about the life of Gala Dali, the wife of Salvador Dali. And her book is called Surreal, and it's created quite a stir. And there's going to be a discussion of it and a presentation at Longhouse on June 29. And I have with me Michelle Gerber-Klein, the author, as I said. And what I'd like to know, first of all, is how did you decide you wanted to write about this woman?
Her lawyer in the 70s, their lawyer in the 70s, suggested the idea to me. He thought she was a fascinating woman. He met them when he was a very young man, a starting out lawyer from Minneapolis, from the Midwest. And they hired him because they were having a tax problem. The IRS was investigating her because they had asked her if her only bank account, if the Dali's only bank account was in the United States. And she lied and she said, yes, it was an apparent obvious lie. So they started looking into their finances, and he miraculously found a European lawyer to be his partner, and they managed to retrieve about $1 million from the American IRS. So he made them $1 million. So they liked him and they kept him on an hourly basis, and they kept him living with them and following them around like a watchdog. So every time they got into trouble, he could get them out of it. They frequently got into trouble. They were quite controversial.
What kind of trouble?
Well, I mean, famously, he bashed himself through the Monument Teller window and nearly getting decapitated, that kind of trouble. What are some of the other things he did? He gave a talk in London in an old-fashioned diving suit and practically asphyxiated himself and had to be rescued. And when he was rescued, he said he was trying to show what it was like to dive deeply into the subconscious.
I think I attended that you're talking about Salvador Dali.
Yes, but she did it with him. They were partners.
I was down in the sewer at Avenue A with Salvador Dali and his great mustache. He was expounding on something, which I don't recall, but I was working for an underground newspaper at the time. Mm-hmm. And that's probably that scene. This would have been about 1966, 67, somewhere
around. Was he underground?
Yes, he'd climbed down a sewer.
Yes, that was so that people could explore the underpinnings of life.
Well, I never saw him again, and I had never met him before. So this was an experience
memorable.
Never forgotten.
Did you have a good time?
Yes, it smelled terrible, but I did.
Good.
And we were just down there for like an hour, or half an hour, and he was talking away and waxing his mustache, I recall. Tell me the whole story about her, first of all, because that's who you focused upon.
Yeah, she was Russian. She was born in Kazan, which was a Mongol stronghold. So when Europe was having the Renaissance, Russia was having the Mongol invasion, and the capital of the Khan, one of the Khan tribes, was Kazan. And she came from a family that owned small gold mines in southern Siberia. But she lost her father when she was very young, and she retreated into the world of books and novels. And that was her reality. when she was seven. And she, girls weren't really educated in Russia, but her stepfather sent her to an elite school and she was a brilliant scholar. But she had physical problems and they sent her to, the family sent her to Clavadel, which was the sanitarium that Thomas Mann wrote about in The Magic Mountain. There she met a 16-year-old French boy with an excruciatingly long name who wanted to become a poet. And she taught him, they fell in love. They were the only two people at the sanitarium who spoke French. Everybody else spoke either Russian or German, but she could speak French because she was an educated Russian and that's what they could speak. They fell in love. She taught him to write poetry. They decided to get married. The parents were, both sets of parents thought this was the worst idea they'd ever heard. They went back to their respective countries. And during World War I, she left Russia. She traveled across Russia to Sweden and from Sweden to England and across the channel, which was mined by herself, to be with Paul, who was who had been drafted to be in the army and who wanted to go to the front, and she didn't want him to go to the front. Anyway, they got married and they joined a group of intellectuals around a magazine called Literature, where that had all the soon to become surrealists. What else can I tell you? They went from writing to being interested in art and collecting art. And the most notorious young artist at the time was Max Ernst, who was not allowed, who was considered very subversive in Cologne. He was a Dadaist. He was not allowed out of Germany. The German government watched him closely. He was always afraid they were going to destroy his paintings because they were so dangerous. They went to see Max Ernst. Paul gave Max Ernst his passport and they smuggled Max out of Germany to live with them in France. So the three of them lived together for a couple of years. At which point Paul became disenchanted with the arrangement and disappeared. And everybody thought he had died. They thought he had done, there was a famous French poet who was sort of rock star poet called Arthur Rimbaud who gave up writing poetry at 30, but is still considered one of the greatest French poets. And everybody idolized him, who's gorgeous. And he was very debauched. And he disappeared to Africa. So they thought Paul had done the same thing and he had died. And he had handed in his last manuscript and he would never come back. But he resurfaced in Vietnam and Gala and Elward and Ernst had to go to fetch him and bring him back. That dissolved the threesome. And Gala and Paul went on for a bit, but it wasn't quite the same. He took her.
How did she come to meet Salvador Dali?
He took her. He met Salvador Dali. She was on a business trip. They were art advisors, among other things. And so she was on a business trip and he was in a nightclub with some dancer from the nightclub. And André Breton introduced her to the young Salvador Dali, who just come to Paris. And Salvador is really impressed by how worldly and chic and sophisticated Paul was. And he thought, God, that guy's wife must be really something. I want to meet her. And he invited them to come visit him in Spain. So they went. Paul took her to Spain and introduced her to Salvador Dali. And she fell in love with him. He was 10 years younger than she was. She was already well known in intellectual circles in France. She was known as the mother of surrealism. And she knew that she could make him famous. And so that was the bond. She was very maternal in her. I mean, she was sort of, she liked, you know, her motivations. And she said, I don't know, I've never heard of a woman. She finds these men that are sort of half dead and she breathes life into them. She gives them vocations. Anyway, so they started, she left Paul, who loved her for the rest of his life and wrote to her as long as he lived and wrote her incredible love letters. But She went to live with Salvador. His father, who was a notary, which is sort of like a lawyer, but not quite, but is an employee of the state, and was very proper, was furious, and disinherited him. And so they sort of had, they were on the lam for a while. The father tried to get him kicked out of Spain, actually. And so they went to live in Paris for a while, and she built his reputation in Paris. And finally the father calmed down and they moved back to Spain. But she marketed Salvador in a variety of ways. She advised him on his art. She hung his shows. She taught him to eat chicken without throwing the bones at the ceiling, according to him, how to go downstairs without falling down them, how to recognize their enemies and how to stop wasting their money. She was his life coach.
Did they stay together for the rest of their lives?
Yes. And when she met him, one of the things they did was they would take these long walks by on the romantic Spanish coastline. And when she met him, one of the first things she said to him, he was very nervous. He was scared of her and he was very attracted to her. And she recognized, she took both his hands in hers and said, "My little boy, we will never leave each other."
How old was she at the beginning?
He was 25 and she was 35 and something like in there.
Well, that's a wonderful story. And what you said, she was sort of the mother of surrealism. How did she get that?
Well, she was the group of literature that was around this publication that they all did, that published the most notorious and cutting edge writers and artists of the 20s of that period. She was intimately involved with many of them, one way or the other. And André Breton, whom she did not have an affair with, but who was sort of obsessed with her anyway, wrote his most famous book, Nadja, about a personality that there's a real person that he knew that was a basis for it. But the personality of this heroine is very much Gala's personality. He got it from Gala. And what happens is he has an affair with this woman, this fictitious woman, and he breaks up with her because he realizes she's marginally insane, but he can't get her out of his head. And so the memory becomes a reality, and the reality of the memory of the thought of Gala becomes the first surrealist woman. And so Gala is the mother of surrealism. Does that make sense to you? No, not really, but it's a sort of convoluted logic, poetic logic.
Have you written other books?
Yes, I have.
Tell me about some of the other ones as well.
This is my second book. So the first book was about Charles James, who was actually a friend of the Dalis because he worked for Schiaparelli and they worked with Schiaparelli. Charles James invented the puffer. He made the first dress with a zipper. He made the first fake fur coat. He was more of an inventor than a designer. He was extremely eccentric, but he was very important in the history of fashion. He was sort of a romantic half Brit who came to America and broke his heart trying to make mass clothing. He couldn't do it.
How did you get interested in surrealism in this period?
Apart from Michael Stout's recommendation, it was really Michael Stout who thought she was interesting. And when you write about somebody who, when you write a biography, you want the person to have an interesting personality as well as an interesting life. Right. And so to write about Gala, one cannot not write about surrealism because that was her life. She co-created it. She lived it. She was in the painting. She modeled for hundreds of paintings that Salvador made of her. And it was a movement that not only swept Europe in the 20s, but was extremely important in America during the war because it had a lovely escapist quality to it. It was about dreams. It was about possibilities. It was about transformation. It was about incongruencies. It was just very seductive, and it remains seductive. I mean, it's becoming seductive again as the world becomes increasingly complicated. Surrealism becomes increasingly charming to people.
Tell me about yourself and where were you born and raised, and what were your interests when you were younger?
Fairy tales. I was born, those were my interests. I like fairy tales. That's why I like Gala. We have the same sense of fantasy. I was born in New Mexico. My father was French and wanted to go meet some Indians. So my parents were in New Mexico to meet Indians when I was born. They were friends with a Pueblo tribe. And I didn't live there very long. We moved, but and we lived several places, including France briefly. And then I came to New York and I grew up here. I went to school here and I went to school in Philadelphia. And then I came back here and my career was in fashion and in art.
Have you come out to the Hamptons before?
Oh, sure. You can't grow up in New York and not come out to the Hamptons. That would be impossible.
Yes. Do you have a place out here?
No, I don't. I summer in Cold Spring.
What is the Hamptons mean to you? I've always asked this of people. Why do you like it here?
That's a good question. It has as much vitality as Manhattan. It has that buzz, but it has also an added component of tranquility. And it really has all kinds of people. I mean, one tends to think of the wealth statements in the Hamptons, but frankly, it has all kinds of people. It's a vivid community.
Have you had a career other than as a writer?
Yes, I was involved in fashion for a long time. I started a company called, I was in charge of women's licensing for Lanvin in the United States. And then I started a company called Joan Vass USA in the early 80s when I was still a kid. And that was knits. It was popular priced, elegant knits. She won a Coty Award. So it was a serious company. And then I met my husband and I got married. And his family was very involved in the art world. So I became involved in the art world as well.
Did you go to the fashion show at the museum this year?
Have I seen it? Yes.
Did you go to the show a couple of days ago? It happened.
I didn't go to the party of the year, but I've been to a private walkthrough of the show, and I think it's spectacular, actually. Okay. It was interesting to me because although the clothes are by no means effeminate, there were many that I would like to wear. You know, it's men's clothing for the first time, and it's beautiful. Yes. It's great. I like the way it's displayed.
Yes, and it was a rainy night. We look out from this apartment over the Met, so we got a great view of it. Do you have plans for another book? And if so, where? Have you thought about it?
Gala said the secrets of my secrets is I don't tell them.
I see. That's true. Do you like writing?
I love it.
Will you be out here at the Longhouse on June 29 when they discuss this all?
Oh, yes, I will. I'll be part of the discussion. I'm talking with Tiffany Dubin, so we'll probably talk about his jewelry. He made fabulous jewelry. He said, if the Renaissance artist could make jewelry, so could I. And Tiffany is an expert on artist jewelry, so that probably will be part of the discussion. I don't know what else we'll discuss. Gala's agency, their escapades, who the hell knows? Who knows?
Have you been interested at all in abstract expressionism, which is, this was,
yes,
for a while, the main part of it?
Yes, and yes.
That was much later than what you're writing about.
But what I was writing about is directly, first of all, de Kooning was a very good friend of Dali's. And Dali thought that de Kooning was a great artist. But if you talk about people like Jackson Pollock, the surrealists invented something called automatic writing, which is that one would just write what came to your mind and put it down, and that would somehow make sense. And Pollock's gestural paintings come right out of that thought process. So there's a direct link.
Would you be interested in writing about that era out here?
Actually, that's a very good idea. And the 50s, which is really, I think, what you're talking about, is a fascinating period.
Yes, and you know his house has been restored in the 40s and 50s out here. And
yeah.
I hope to see you then on the 29th at Longhouse. And thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. And I hope to see you there then, too. It was a pleasure meeting you electronically.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Until soon.